Hello, and welcome to Drunk on Comics, Episode 9. This is our podcast about comic books, conventions, and all other things nerdy. My name is Derek. With me today, we've got Tony.
Yep.
And man, we have Kevin.
Man, his intros are killing me.
Oh, we're keeping this one.
We're keeping this one. It almost sounds like we've stopped and tried to like record this intro like 3-4 times already.
This is only take number 2, but it's going to be the one that we're going with. Maybe we can put take number 1 in the director's cut. You know, when we release things a little bit later on.
Well, we were talking the other night about including Easter eggs on the site.
Yeah,
and I mean, I love Tony's suggestion of putting in the Contra code,
Konami code.
Yeah. What other games did that work on?
Worked on pretty much most of their games that they made.
The only other game that I remember that worked on was Jackal. Remember that game where you were in Jeeps?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, there's one that was sort of like it was a little bit off before Sonic the Hedgehog.
Really? What did that one do?
That one was up, down, left, right, AB start. But that one brought up the where you could cheat and go to any level.
Oh, okay. Fuck, I would have needed. I wish I would have known about that because that would have been about the only way I could have beat that game. Fucking tough as shit.
See, I never really played Sonic. I don't know why. I was just a Nintendo guy.
Did you even have a Genesis? Did you have access to one?
I had access. My friends had it.
Oh, okay.
But you were too poor to have one.
I hate you guys. I'm going home. Oh, wait. Fuck off. I am home. Get out. So, all right, guys. Well, we should probably get into the actual podcast.
Let's do this.
Yeah. Or once again, this is going to turn into another special, super special bullshit edition, which...
We got an agenda, we'll rock it.
Yeah, we do. And actually, we're going to start here with Off the Shelf. This is our segment where we're going to talk about books that came out this week. So, here's your warning. We are spoiler heavy. We don't have any problem withholding information about what went on in the book. So, if you haven't read your books, hit pause now, go read them, and then come back and listen. Otherwise, if you don't care, you like spoilers, awesome, you're in the right spot.
And to be honest, too, we would then say, the review was, this book was made by this person, and then we wouldn't talk because anything we said would be
the art
a spoiler.
Was their art was pretty.
Yeah. So, Tony, you and I actually read one of the same books. Why don't you kick it off and kind of fill in?
Yeah, we read a couple of the same books this week, chatting back and forth and finding out we both pulled the same comics. I'm going to start off with Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe.
Number one.
Yes. Written by Colin Bunn. Art by Dalibor Talajic?
Yeah, I'm not real sure. Talajic?
That's what really need to have someone out there be able to pronounce these names for us so we don't butcher them, because I always feel horrible about that. But art was perfect, so sorry for slaughtering your name, but you did pretty well drawing.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was beautiful. I mean, especially for Deadpool.
And yeah. I just thought the whole story was pretty sweet. I mean, it's an awesome premise. At first, I was a little skeptical of how he would go over the deep end. But with an offshoot character like the Psycho Man using his control box, I can see how the super crazy switch was flipped.
Yeah.
And since he's so hard to kill, and damn near impossible, actually, he's the perfect person to actually take on the whole Marvel Universe because he can just keep coming back up from a punch.
Or having his head popped like a giant pimple in this book.
And it started off just so awesome, too. Like, you don't know what the hell is going on. And by the end of the story, when he gets that ray gun from Reed, that just sealed the deal for me.
Yeah. And I've never been, basically the book starts out, and Tony, if I'm stepping on your toes, just smack me, but... All right, you tell it.
No, you can say your favorite part, which pisses me off.
Okay, well, the book starts out with the Watcher, and...
I love the Watcher. It is a character in Marvel Universe that is, like, an omni-god who tells you the stories. He's a character that helps, resolve around when there's a huge thing going on. the Watcher's there, and you kind of know it's an event.
The nice thing with the Watcher is that when you see the Watcher, you know almost always that this is kind of a what-if type story.
Yep. You know?
I'm flipping through this book while you guys are talking about it, and the first thing I see is the Watcher. I'm like, I'm hooked.
Oh, wait, though. See, I hate the Watcher.
Yeah, I don't understand why he hates the Watcher.
I think the Watcher's just a giant dick. Maybe it's the popped...
What'd he do to you?
Maybe it's the popped collar. I don't know. But he's just a giant D-bag. But my favorite part at the end is that Deadpool cuts off the Watcher's head. I was so fucking happy.
I know, and the Watcher actually, through some comic books lately, has been taking some shit. He had the Hulk punch him. He's had Deadpool in another off-series, the Deadpool Team-Ups comic books a while ago, get smacked over the head. And also the Watcher actually had his younger brother or something actually watch him because they realize watching Deadpool is not something they generally want to watch.
See, and I don't know. The guy just seems like a perv. Like, he just sits there.
He's
like,
the one that tells you the stories. He is outside the fourth dimension. And if he... didn't. If the Watcher's dead, then who's going to tell you the Marvel story?
If you were the Watcher, man, you would...
Totally yeah, you'd be watching all these...
We'd all be total pervs, man.
But see, now, here's the thing. Has the Watcher ever interfered?
Once, and that's the thing that they're not supposed to do. If you actually get into reading what about the Watcher, and I know we're stepping away from Deadpool for a sec, but when you learn who the Watcher is and what his role is in the Marvel Total Universe... it's kind of interesting how he can know everything, know every single possibility, but can't interfere. The first time and only time that he did was he gave Reed Richards the Ultimate Nullifier, which is the one thing that Galactus is afraid of, because it would wipe Galactus out of his universe.
So there's my point exactly. He's not supposed to do anything, but you know what? He's just a dick and decides that he's going to fuck with things.
Dude, he wasn't a dick. He was like, you know, what the fuck, Galactus? This planet actually has something going for it, let it go. And he's just like, then he transported the Human Torch to go get the Nullifier. And,
I still say it's a D-bag.
The reason why there's the breathable part on the moon, he's got his base there. He watches us from the moon.
In his pimp mansion.
Yep. Yeah.
But anyways, there's, besides him, Deadpool, I mean... he's just awesome, and that's what pretty much helps him be able to take, take this title on, to be able to kill the Marvel Universe.
He killed all of Fantastic Four in this issue.
Yeah, and it looks like the next issue is going to be the Avengers.
Yep.
I'm very looking forward to seeing how he does it, because...
this book, just, you know, there's so many possibilities that this book can go through. Go to, even though we know, you know, what he's going to end up doing.
Yeah, and I gotta say, I mean, like, with him killing the Fantastic Four, you know, there were some great things. Ben Grimm was smashed into little bits of, like, rock and sand, basically. Don't know how he did it. Don't know how he killed Reed Richards, but Reed Richards is basically melting and looks like a stroke victim in the first couple frames until he's, like, just melted away. Great art on that, by the way.
Oh, and this explains to you why I love Deadpool so much. He can kill the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
If he so wanted to.
I tell you, the one thing I really thought was very clever, though, is that the Invisible Woman is running in, and as he kills her brother, the blood splashes on her, and he sees the blood.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And couldn't see her, but he could see the blood on her, and he's like, oh, red looks great on you, or whatever. I'm like... yeah,
and this is definitely a title to pick up. It's like a different universe, kind of like the Space Punisher, and, you know, give another shout out to Frank. I think that's going to be my new thing now. Frank's my new online buddy, so I'll work you in there somehow to get a shout out. But yeah. I just have to say, you know, Wolverine has been giving Deadpool a run for his money. It's about time there's another Deadpool title to even out the most overpublished character ever award. Just going to say that out there, but I always pick up every Deadpool comic book anyway, so...
And now, do you know, is this a 4-issue or 5-issue miniseries?
It doesn't say what the miniseries is. Usually they'll say one out of something, so I'm guessing it probably doesn't have an end run until maybe they run out.
I'm guessing that this is... I mean, because normally, like, a what-if type thing, and I'll take a peek and see.
Well, do you think that they might have left it open-ended? Just to see, like, because if the sales past the first couple of issues are strong, I mean, wouldn't they just want to kind of just draw out the stories? I don't know if they...
It's a one-of-four.
Okay.
Yeah. So...
Oh, they should push it. Push it to five or six. Keep it going.
Yeah, so, you know, Cullen Bunn, if you're listening to this, please...
it's a what-if, so they could do a what-if of a what-if.
Well, they could do what if this wasn't a four-issue miniseries and it was a regular run. So, yeah, no, I really enjoyed the book myself. It was one of the most pleasurable reads I've had in a long time. So, Tony, you got anything else on this one?
Wow, in a long time, that's putting it high up on the...
Well, and especially considering, too, I mean, really, I should point out, I'm not really a big Deadpool fan. I don't dislike him. I just never really been that big of a fan.
What don't you like about him?
Is he
too much of a mouth?
Well, I think it's because he hangs out with the Watcher. So, no, I just never really got into the character that much, you know, but...
Oh, fair enough. I've only read just a very tiny amount with him.
I mean, I picked up the original miniseries back in the 90s, you know, and all that, and like I said, I don't have any problem. Uncanny X-Force, you know, which he's in, that's one of my favorite titles out there, but, you know, he's just had neither here nor there, but for me to actually go and pick this up... I picked up the book, I looked at the art, and I'm like, yeah, I'm buying this book. And very glad I did. Very glad I did. So, all right, well, moving on. Book I picked up this week, another number one, which was Hawkeye, the new series from Matt Fraction on writing, David Aja and Matt Hollingsworth drawing it, and... The one I got was actually a variant cover by A.D. Granoff as well. And so this is a brand new series starring Hawkeye in his own solo book. And so, you know, I kind of figure if you're not really familiar with the character, he was the guy with the bow and the arrow in that big movie that everybody talked about this summer. So, however, I'm pretty sure everybody, if they're listening to us, I don't know why they wouldn't know who Hawkeye is. But I think one of the best summaries... about this book is actually on the title page in here. And I'm going to quote it directly. It says, Clint Barton, a.k.a. Hawkeye, became the greatest sharpshooter ever known to man. He then joined the Avengers. This is what he does when he's not being an Avenger. That's all you need to know. Which I think is a great thing. And this book, excuse me, the book starts out with Clint basically getting himself hurt, which is kind of a nice way of showing that he doesn't have superpowers. But it also kind of shows that he is tough as nails. And the story really revolves around his own personal life, particularly the apartment that he lives in, his neighbors, and the Russian mob that owns that apartment building. The mob is basically going out and tripling the rent of all the tenants because they want everybody to move out because they are going to sell it to someone who is an unknown person at this point in the story. When I picked up this book, I was actually expecting a superhero book. You know, I was expecting to see Hawkeye going out and fighting crime, and this is not what it is at all. This is about Clint Barton, who he is as a man, more than who he is as an Avenger or a superhero.
So does he, like, go to the grocery store? And...
Well, there are a lot of...
Get some gas.
Makes his own arrows.
Yeah, it doesn't quite get it. But this is actually a really touching story. I was kind of surprised. I'm actually hooked in this, because... I didn't realize, but this is exactly the kind of book that I needed, you know, just to kind of complement all the other stuff that we go through every day with the superhero stories.
Not the hero that you wanted. It's the hero that you needed.
Oh, Jesus. God.
Well, I just want to say my take on Hawkeye. I started reading The Avengers right around Disassembled, so he was kind of already out of the picture until recently when he's, you know, come back from the dead. And before, like, I didn't really care. He was just, like, Green Arrow and shot arrows and whoop-de-doo. The arrows had different tips. But I've really liked his storyline in Avengers in more recent years since coming back and seeing that he's a little more developed character than just the sharpshooter arrow buff.
Well, and I think it's really nice to kind of get the backside of that character, you know, who they are as a person. And honestly, I think that Marvel needs to do a little bit more of this with some of their characters. I mean, they're doing a little bit with Daredevil and with the new Captain Marvel. But you look at the X titles, and dude, nobody has any personal backstory anymore, you know, except for maybe Storm, but that's because she's always crying. But
she's still
afraid
crying.
Of being locked in a closet.
Oh, you know, T'Challa, why can't we be happy? You know, shut up. I hope they kill her. But
oh, wow.
I hate that character. I really do. Cool power. Not a fan of the character. But Matt Fraction, though, back to Hawkeye, did a fantastic job, you know, on making a character that you can... making a character relatable because you can actually empathize with him. The art on this book, I gotta say, was not what I expected at all. But again, I was going in expecting another superhero book. So when I opened it up, I was actually disappointed at first. I'm like, this isn't... how are they going to do this? By the time I got to the last page, I could not imagine a different artist telling this story. The art that Aja does on this is so integral to the emotion and the heart of the story that, I mean, it's just fantastic. I realized I was wrong. Going back to Frank, I judged the book by its first page, not its cover.
By its cover art?
But, and I shouldn't have. Also, one other thing I was, you know, with the art, sorry, lost my train of thought, with the art was that the colors done by Matt Hollingsworth were awesome. I don't really pay too much attention to that as much as I probably should, but he used a couple different, I guess, color palettes, you would say, to make it easy for you to understand that the story was jumping back and forth between the past and the present without having to say 3 days ago. Today,
okay.
You know, last week, whatever it may be. So it was a real nice thing. But I enjoyed this book. I think it's a very refreshing look at the human side of one of the cooler characters that's out in the Marvel Universe. And I will be picking up issue 2 for sure. So,
all right.
Cool, man. That sounds great.
Yeah, fun book. So I think it's actually just a good book just for pretty much anybody, unless all they're looking for is the explosions and the bang pows.
Gotcha. One of the other books that I picked up this week, I would say it'd go under the Indie Turnpike, but Derek likes to hog all the glory and read all those books in those segments. So
yeah, that's me.
So I will just throw it up here and off the shelf. But anyways, picked up X-Cop, President of the World.
X-Cop?
Yes, X-Cop.
Like, can I ax you something, cop?
Yes, it is. It is a cop with an X. Kind of the story is written by Malachi Nicoli and drawings by Ethan Nicoli. Malachi is age 8. Ethan's age 31 presently right now. That's what the real kicker is for this story, is that it's made up by an 8-year-old. Pretty much Ethan talks to his brother and visits him and gets the ideas and stories from Malachi. A lot of the ideas are so crazy, but out of them, a story develops. And
okay, so the artist and the writer are brothers?
Yes.
Yeah, I know.
Separated
it's,
by
yeah, 31 and
8. Years.
Yeah,
wow.
I was reading about this, because I actually picked up X-Cop today, and I was reading it. It took me a minute, but yeah, I found out they were brothers. I don't know how exactly that works out. Probably
sure.
Some sort of stepbrother kind of
maybe
thing.
Not. Maybe they're like the Duggars? And there's like 50 kids. You know, and so like, you know, the youngest is like 1 and the oldest is like 39.
Maybe their mom is just like a baby bazooka. She's on shooting them out.
You know what though? I bet you if Malachi comes up with that idea, you might see it in Space
no,
Cop.
I was looking at his name. Is it Malachi?
That's typically the traditional pronunciation
okay.
Spelling.
The Bible.
Yeah.
Is that in the comic?
The Bible?
Yeah.
No. Well,
I was stumped on the name too, but sorry, Charlie.
I was stumped on the name too. But as we always apologize if we pronounce your name wrong, put it somewhere online where we can realize how to pronounce it.
Or tell us.
Yeah, just call us.
Yeah.
But either or.
Charlie's number is.
But the comic book though came out though originally started off as a web comic a couple years ago, so you can find it at xcop.com. And there's a ton of them up there, and pretty much going through the questions right now. They're trying to reach 100 Ask XCOP, where people write in questions. Ethan then Skypes his little brother and says, you know, this is the question. And from that conversation, like one of them that I saw online actually was, what would XCOP have in his secret lair? And the kid's like, a room that just makes weapons. And so Ethan starts drawing a room that makes weapons. Like, it's so innocent and so crazy and so out there.
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed the Ask Cop, how did you become a cop? Oh, my God. I'm like, you know, that was funny. That was funny. I mean, a few of them were misses, but
Axe Cop. Yeah. And so, and like I said, this is a really good book to pick up if you've never actually gone to the web series. And obviously, this is on the web series. It's more of a small panel type, you know, quick segment. And they have continuing storylines. But this is a full-fledged comic book, part of a three-part going on. And they had one prior to this, Axe Cop Bad Guys Earth, I believe it was.
Well, and we were at... we were at my favorite comic book store earlier today, and they even had trade paperbacks out, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I saw, I think it was 1, 2, and 3 out there. I don't know if there's any more than that, but still, that's kind of a cool thing, too, if you can't get a hold of, or if you're like me, and I don't like reading comics online.
Mm-hmm. And I would just say, I mean, the coolest thing is because all these ideas come from an 8-year-old child's mind.
Yeah.
And that they come out to be a kind of story. It's fun. It's, you don't know what's going to happen next. And when things just totally go for like left field, when you think they're going right, you're just like, oh, okay. I can see my 8-year-old self imagining that and that happening. And
now let me ask you, if you did not know,
want to ask me?
Yeah. Let me ask copy this. If you did not know that when he was writing this, that he was 7 and 8 years old, would it still be a good comic book?
Yes, because the drawings are pretty good. Ethan's style of drawings. And it's so crazy enough that it reminds me partly of kind of a Deadpool comic, where you really don't know what the hell they're going to say or do next. And sometimes they flat out the verbal bubbles that the characters have sometimes are just on point of so witty and so just outrageously.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like one of the things that made me definitely get a good laugh was when a gorilla basically shits out a volcano. I mean, oh, it came out of his tail.
Yeah,
but I mean, that's just crazy off the wall that I always enjoy seeing that kind of zaniness.
I mean, I felt like I've shit a volcano before. Or at least
after the lunch you told me that you guys had this afternoon, you probably are going to be doing some trots to the restroom
but,
with some lava coming out.
Like I said, I could highly recommend just picking up, if not for even supporting them. I mean, they are very indie artists. I mean, Dark Horse picked them up to be able to do these runs. In comic book form, and would love to see more of this sort of stuff happening in the comic book world, especially coming from web comics too, because they don't get paid. I mean, some people make decent money, but obviously real format, you know, comic books is where some of the money's at. And
yeah, and that 8-year-old kid's got to pay rent.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So and go buy the damn book.
One other thing too I had heard was there's talks of actually a show about Axe Cop coming to, I don't know if it was Fox Animation Domination or Cartoon Network.
Yeah, Fox Primetime. Like, whoa. That's a That's crazy to think about that they're going to have a show on primetime television that has Axe in the title. I mean, just something.
And made by an 8-year-old kid as like an executive story writer. Like,
damn kid's going to be a millionaire by the time he's like 9.
Oh, sure. Well, hopefully he just, you know, remembers where he came from. And he just, you know,
I remember where I came from when I was 8. I liked cucumbers. That's all I got.
I don't even know where you're going with that.
Yeah.
That's where I came from. I liked cucumbers.
Okay.
When I was 8. That's what I remember about being 8.
That's it?
Well, I drank a lot, Tony.
Killed all those 8-year-old brain cells. Maybe this wouldn't be the book for you, Derek. You might not understand the zaniness.
Tony, how did you find out about Axe Cop?
Actually, from another really good series online, Dr. McNinja. Which
Dr. McNinja?
Yes, Dr. McNinja. Highly recommend going to drmcninja.com as well. Hilarious, because it's a ninja doctor that is also his last name is McNinja as well. They're the McNinja clan.
That's convenient.
Yeah, but they're from Ireland. So,
because they're the McNinjas.
Yes, and just throw that zaniness in there. And there was a couple, I don't know if it was a year ago now, but a little while ago, there was a crossover with Dr. McNinja and X-Cop that they did online for the web series.
And that's how you found it.
And that's how I learned about what X-Cop was, yeah. So when I saw it at the comic book store in comic book form, I was like I said, I'd pick it up, support them, and go from there.
All right.
Yeah, so but I had to thank you, Derek. Actually, you gave me that previews book, and that's how I found out about this. I was just reading the descriptions of all these books coming out, because I mean, there's so much stuff out there that, I mean, it is available, but we don't see it in the comic book store or stuff. I didn't even know that they've dreamt up, and I read this description, and I'm like, hey, it's, you know, if it's being picked up by Dark Horse, I mean, it's got to be worth a shot. So thanks for introducing me to that.
Yeah, the previews are always fun to look at.
Yeah, it's very entertaining. Actually, I found out there was a convention not too far from here that we missed, in Battle Creek.
Oh.
Yeah, it was end of May.
No, not kidding.
Yeah, it would have been like, I think probably the weekend after the NoviCon.
Oh, so it was the same weekend as Cherry Capital.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
So. I mean, it was just a toy show, but it's
still, okay. Yeah.
But still, hey, I mean, we've gotten to toy shows before and picked up some goodies.
Yeah.
So.
All right, well, I've got another book I want to chat about. We're just going to move right into that one now, because I suck at segues. So,
I'll give you a B- on your segue.
Oh, sweet.
So better than average.
Yeah, but I should still wear my helmet.
Always a good idea.
Yeah. So the next book I'm talking about, what the hell are we talking about today? The next book I'm
apparently talking
about.
We're talking about fruits and vegetables and safety.
Yeah. is The First X-Men number one. This is written by Neil Adams and Christos Gage. And Adams did the art on as well. The one I picked up had the Ryan Stegman variant cover. This is a new series starring Wolverine, because he's got to keep up with Deadpool. And it predates the original X-Men series. And
which one, though? You're not talking about the
Uncanny.
Uncanny.
Like X-Men, which became Uncanny X-Men.
Does it precursor to Daily Genesis first X-Men team as well?
I'm not familiar with that one, so.
That's when they discover who Vulcan is, who is Scott Summers' brother, and they realize that when they went to, I believe it was Genosha, they find out that actually Xavier had a whole other team before his first class.
Wow. It does predate, and I'll kind of explain. What they do in the story, and I'm assuming that this is going to fall within continuity of everything else.
Really?
I'm assuming. Because they don't give any hint that there's any reason that it would be otherwise. But in this, Logan, a.k.a. Wolverine, realizes that there are mutants and others like himself starting to pop up more and more, and at the same time, the government is searching them out for reasons unknown. But what he does know is that they aren't searching them out because they want to give him cookies and pie. They want to do tests and shit up like that on him. He teams up with Sabretooth, basically by paying Sabretooth to help him. And they go out trying to find these kids that are being hunted down by the feds. The first girl, well, they break into a place, they steal the files, you know, there's fights and blah, blah, blah. The first girl they go after is named Holly Bright, a.k.a. Hollow, like hologram. Her mutant ability allows her to make people see things that aren't really there.
Phantom X!
Basically. And she's so effective at it that people not only see it, they can feel it, they can smell it, you know, at least in their mind. And so she's a cool character. She parades around like a hot supermodel, and then they reveal later she's like a 13-year-old kid, you know. So, but then Logan, along with Hollow and Sabretooth, go after Professor X because he's listed in these files, and tell him that he needs to start searching these mutants out with his big fantastic brain.
Just kid, Professor X,
like just out of college and just starting.
Still has hair.
No, didn't have hair. Was engaged to Moira McTaggart and was, you know, all that. The book is well written, and I did like the art, but overall, I'm not going to pick up number two because I really don't feel like there's anything super original done here. It seems almost more like a tie-in to the movies than it does to the comic book.
That's kind of how I felt with when they had X-Men First Class the movies. I had to sit back, take a second, and be like, this isn't how, you know, you write it in the Marvel Universe. You have to look at it as a different movie universe, is what I call half the movie universes, which is trying to come into the comic book universe. But for all those wrongnesses that I think they're doing with the Samuel L. Jackson, Nick Fury, and all those coming into main Marvel Universe, I enjoyed X-Men First Class as the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as like a different universe, as a different, you know, story for them to do X-Men movies that aren't necessarily how the comic books happened. But when you have a long established line of the Uncanny X-Men going, you kind of can't just say, oh, and we forgot to tell you this story. And like I said, with the small series, when, like I said, we're talking about Vulcan, and you find out that Xavier already had a first class, how did this not ever come up in that conversation? Like, how is there this whole another class as well?
Yeah.
And how is, I know everyone likes to put Wolverine in all of your comic books because Wolverine kind of sells and he is a badass, but sometimes let the dude just have his own title and be out of something for a while. I mean,
yeah,
that's the problem that I have with is when you keep taking these characters and you're saying, oh, but in the past, he actually did this. Because then it makes what's going on in the present totally different perspective.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I think the biggest thing for me is I collect enough X titles as it is, which is why I'm probably not going to keep going on with this. And I'd rather have that. Now, that being said, though, if people aren't super familiar with X-Men or they want something to kind of get into, I think this would be probably a pretty good jumping in point, you know, because then from there, then they can start going and exploring the old original series, you know, or jumping into what's going on. And I think it'd be a nice way of going in. My only real complaint, and this is a personal thing, it's nothing actually against the book, I don't like seeing Sabretooth and Wolverine teaming up together. I like it when they hate each other.
It was horrible enough in that stupid Wolverine movie that they were.
And this kind of plays to that whole origin type thing. But, you know, like I said, I mean, it is a well done book. I really liked the character of Hollow, and I'd like to see her in some other stuff. But yeah, I'm not gonna keep going on it. So that does it basically for us for Off the Shelf this week. Now, since we actually have Kevin here on a regular edition podcast.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Got a nice little format going on.
We got comfy chairs today.
Yeah, we are kicking it.
We're in your
studio here, Derek. It's
my recording studio.
Yeah.
AKA the living room. But Kevin, we haven't been able to do it since episode two?
Yeah. Gosh.
Kevin's long box.
Hey, all right. So I dusted off the long box this week and pulled up an issue of Slapstick. Now, do you guys remember Slapstick at all? Slapstick?
I do remember Slapstick.
Okay. Well, and actually, I got me thinking about him because he made a... And he didn't really have any role in it, but I just, for the first time, completed, like, from beginning to end, the entire Civil War series.
Okay.
Okay, I've never read... I picked up the first couple when it came out mid-2000s, something
Civil
like
War. Well, Civil War came out...
I think 04.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, because right. I was just starting to get back into comics.
Yeah, and I'd say
around that time.
I can see why, you know, that was an epic series for Marvel at the time.
Yeah.
But I was reading it from 1 to 7, and I saw an appearance of him. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember him. So
I don't remember Slapstick. So do you have where I can see it?
Here, you can take a look at, that's issue 4.
Oh, yeah!
Yeah, most people probably saw him and go, what the fuck is this? This is definitely, something completely different that Marvel did. Because, this issue 4 is him with, on the cover, with him with Ghost Rider.
Okay.
And, like, a Ghost Rider and all their other iconic characters have this, you know, look. They look like they are people. Well, Slapstick is basically...
an animaniac.
It's like an animaniac.
He resembles an animated clown. And... You know, I'm a big, huge Hanna-Barbera fan, so like I see this character, and I was instantly drawn to him because he looks animated, and his powers were pretty cool. I mean, the quick origin, and I'm going to talk about Slapstick in general, not just the 4-issue miniseries, which was basically all he was ever in.
Okay.
It was just like a normal teenage kid was chasing this girl, ran into like a clown posse, went through a dimensional portal, and found a magical hammer, and found these gloves, and then he transformed into Slapstick, and his power basically is, well, just like cartoon characters from Looney Tunes or whatever. You know, you can fall off a 20-story building, he'll hit the ground, turn to a pile of goo, form back together, and go, whoa, that'll hurt the bowling average. And so, see, he has the ability to just shrug off normal damage. But his gloves, basically he could position his hands in a manner, and here's a hammer, or here's this semi-automatic weapon. No, I mean, you never pull out a gun, but you just position his hands, and then something would materialize in his hand. I think it was just intended to be a 4-issue miniseries, and he has a couple of appearances randomly here and there. Actually, he came out in 92, but then he really wasn't popped into comics here and there, not until like the mid late 2000s. So it's kind of funny that he actually went away for 15-20 years, and they're like, dust this character off and let's put him randomly in there. So apparently he has been affiliated with the new mutants or new warriors.
Actually, it kind of does look like a clone version of Warlock now that you
mention
it. The new mutants.
You mean like Adam Warlock?
No. Warlock the Phalanx.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the robot-y.
Oh, okay. I guess I have to see that because when you say Warlock, that's the first thing I think of is Adam Warlock.
Yeah.
The Infinity Watch.
No, you're wrong.
I'll find a picture for you while you can.
Okay. It was entertaining. It had really no substance to it. It was just funny. A funny pickup. The original series that I had a 4-issue miniseries. I actually ended up trading all 4 of those issues back in the day for Spawn 1-4.
Nice.
Back then, yeah, that was nice. But
I think you're probably still ahead of the game.
Well, but going back, I'm like, man, I wish I had the all those issues of Slapstick again. I still have issue 1. I did find a back issue of that.
Kevin, don't worry though. I mean, just in a couple months, Deadpool's going to kill him anyways. So,
dude, I want to see the Deadpool versus Slapstick. Battle that I'm dreaming
that
of.
That actually would be pretty
90,
badass.
Since 92, 20 years in the making. So, but yeah, I got a couple name drops. Len Kaminsky and James Fry. Those are the guys who originally created it. Not really sure who did the art for these books, but I thought it was definitely just a step out of the box for Marvel, and I would like them to try other crazy stuff like this. Oh yeah, okay.
Sam, I just showed Kevin a random selection of pictures of
Warlock. Yeah, okay.
He kind of does have a little bit of Warlock and a clown.
I've seen a few issues with him in it because he's an alien, isn't he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Phalanx.
Yeah.
Phalanx. Phallic.
Is he?
What?
So he's in the
cucumber.
I still don't understand this cucumber.
That's where it came from. A cucumber.
Though now that you mention cucumber, man, I'm about ready for some Hendrix, man.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, this podcast brought to us by Hendrix Gin.
No, it's not.
It should be.
No, they didn't give us anything. So, all right.
Moving on.
Yeah, moving on. And actually, you kind of brought up a good thing. We've got some news and notes here that we're gonna chat about, and since it's been a Deadpool heavy day, we might as well get into some other Deadpool news.
Yay!
Tony, I'm gonna ruin your day again.
Fuck off, man! Seriously, go piss off.
Wait,
and
again.
Well, the last time we talked news and notes, I ruined his day by telling him that
Thanos series is canceled or delayed or
whatever. Yeah, canceled. I told him that they killed Phantom X.
Yep.
And that the first appearance of Thanos is probably going to be more expensive than you can ever afford to buy again.
Yep.
Yeah, $6,000 is what
Somebody's trying to sell one for
okay.
Slab version. But, like, Overstreet still has it listed at 3.25 in the near mint minus. But, anyway, so you can probably find one. Maybe. But Deadpool, they are changing the creative team. So Daniel Way, who is a fantastic writer, is going away.
Why?
Like,
because it's part of Marvel now.
Oh, okay. So he's still within the organization. He's just his talents are being shifted to something else.
Marvel sucks now.
Yeah. So, some of these changes, Kieran Gillen and Greg Land are going to go over to Invincible Iron Man. Jason Aaron and Esad Ribic are going to be doing Thor, I believe. Mark Wade and Lineal Francis Yu is going to be working on Indestructible, and which could be a Hulk reboot, from what they're saying. I don't know. But the cool news is that, let's see. It does say that Daniel Way is exiting the book, but they are replacing him on writing duties with Jerry Duggan and comedian Brian Posehn. Who, if you're looking at me like you don't know...
No, the name sounds familiar.
That show with David Spade where they ran the magazine, Brian Posehn is the weird, awkward-looking guy that always came through with the mail.
Oh, yeah, what was that show? Was it Suddenly Susan?
No, not Suddenly Susan. It had Laura San Giacomo on it.
Oh, my God, yeah, that show was on, for forever. I don't understand why. I don't think anyone actually watched it. Wasn't Kathy Griffin on that show? No, I am thinking of Suddenly Susan.
Yeah, you're definitely thinking of Suddenly. But, yeah, the show was on forever, but yeah, so he's a very awkward-looking guy, but he's a fantastic stand-up comedian, and he's a major fanboy. So I'm looking forward to seeing what goes on in Deadpool. I might actually start picking it up, because I want to see what Brian Posehn can do. So that's part of the news. There was a massive Twitter controversy over this, because when this was announced, the creator of Deadpool, Rob Liefeld, sent out a tweet that said, "Testament," and this is a quote, "Testament to Deadpool's appeal and durability is that he thrives regardless of being regulated to D-list talent. Marvel A-list never touches." Now,
I agree with that.
Well, here's the thing. He pissed off every artist and writer that is currently working on or has worked on Deadpool. I mean, would you consider...
Is he saying that it's always been D-list people working on it?
Pretty much.
After he stopped working for Marvel?
Basically what he's saying is that the character...
They were saying that Deadpool was regulated as D-list status. I didn't think it was...
No, he's talking about the creative team.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
Rob.
So he actually... Now, what he did in... Two things at once. He's patting himself on the back going, "I created one of the most awesome characters ever. Doesn't matter who writes it." But then also says, "Hey, everybody that writes it and draws it, y'all are D-list," basically saying, "You suck." Now, was that his intention? Probably not. But he created himself a shitstorm. And rather than just come right up and apologize, he basically kind of backpedaled for a while. And then he came out and apologized, and, you know...
This is, months later?
No, hours later, after defending himself on Twitter. I mean, it was insane.
Dude, he was seriously stroking himself.
Yeah.
Thank God.
But here's where, you know, before he apologized, he actually put up another tweet that says, "Carry on, Internet," because when people are just, bashing him hardcore. And that was his tweet. There was another tweet from another guy, and he said, "Just admit you were in the wrong, you goon." To which Rob Liefeld replies, "Blow me." I'm like, wow.
Wow. It should be a little bit professional. I mean,
yeah, now the guy who called him out was not, as far as I know, is not a professional in the comic book industry. But I mean, still, you know, why... He finally did come out. It was quite a bit bigger than our little Twittergate from a couple weeks ago, which was nothing. But it was just kind of surprising to see that. But
I think Rob's just realizing that no one's paying attention to him, so he has to be infamous and cause controversy for people to talk about him.
I mean, this guy gets dogged on a regular basis over his
art. Oh, yeah, I know. What you told me about this, I had to go look it up, because I'm not keen on the artists like you guys are. And yeah, there's some real hate towards this guy.
And that's the thing.
Yeah, he's drawn some kind of weird shit, but...
I used to defend him a bit. I used to, you know, everyone giving him shit. I'm like, I enjoyed... some of, you know, the big, you know, X-Force, covers and everything where everyone had 10 pounds of muscle on them and 30 packs that who knows what the hell were in each of
those asses.
They had muscles on muscles.
Yes, but the very most important thing is he liked to draw little packs on every single part of them to carry a sandwich, maybe.
Yeah.
Cucumber, who knows?
Cucumbers are important. They're delicious and nutritious.
And people gave him crap for that. And
actually, people mostly give him crap because he can't draw feet.
Well, either... I still think that his drawings is like is just like a scene or a picture as you'd get, you know, a commission at a fair or a convention, stick out as kind of cool looking. But I take back ever defending you. Fuck you for saying all these writers suck, because guess what? They're 10 times better than you.
Well, now here's...
Go eat a
huge... Here's the thing. Before you make a death threat... Jesus. with a cucumber, nonetheless. Before you do that, he did eventually apologize. And, you know, but I think where he made a mistake was not necessarily what he said, because I think what he said probably just came out wrong. He should have just said, I didn't mean it to come out like that. I'm sorry. This is what I meant. But he just sat there and backpedaled.
Yeah, dude, I bet you someone like a friend or someone... colleague of his said, "Dude, you gotta say something."
Well, when
you, you, I mean, that's what.
Rob, I apologize for what I said about eating a cucumber and.
Wow,
Jesus!
I kid. We kid around here.
Oh my God! Why do I see a lawsuit, Tony?
Tony's views don't necessarily reflect those of Drunken Comics.
They don't reflect mine. So that was a big controversy, which apparently Tony's going to create one for us today.
More Twittergate, yay!
Oh, shit. So, alright, more stuff on Marvel. Marvel's sales are slumping quite drastically, and if what I saw is true, DC is taking over top sales again.
Well, wow, how are DC sales doing? Are they something not as bad?
Well,
because I stopped by a random comic book shop the other day, and I was talking to the guy, and kind of had a woe is me attitude. Like, well, comics are expensive, you know, people are only buying one at a time. I'm like, oh, thanks, Eeyore. I'm gonna go hang myself now.
Yeah,
but
so,
is DC doing pretty good?
DC's
doing
all
right.
Is
that new logo helping out?
I don't think that new logo helps anyone. But the DC did come back with the new 52. Excuse me. You know, so, but it's just kind of surprising. I mean, it's nothing really that you can really dive too much. Yeah.
I got a retail bag from a lot of comic book store that actually is pretty cool. The big advertisement that says the new 52. Anyway, sorry, Derek.
No, that's fine. But yeah, I mean, it's DC crashed and came back. Marvel's more slumping. So you know, it's just kind of interesting to see, even with the huge AVX thing going on, that you know. That those kind of things can happen.
Maybe if Marvel would stop pushing their writers all around to different things and giving us 10 different X-Men books, and although I love reading Wolverine and Deadpool, maybe cut back on how many of those that we read.
Yeah.
I mean, if they... I don't know. I just think that overall, at the top, they're not making good decisions.
Yeah, well, do you think... what you just said, I'm thinking of along the lines of more selection will actually lead to less sales. Because I remember this excellent seminar I was attending. This guy basically said, like, they've done studies where you go, like, a man go into a candle shop. I don't know why a man's going into a candle shop, but in store A, there's 50 varieties, and at a certain percentage, he'll actually not make a decision and buy nothing. Whereas he'll go into a very similar store with a third of the amount of candles, and he will buy.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's part of Marvel's problem, is they got too many things.
Well, I think their problem, my personal opinion, is that the problem that they have is that there's too many titles, with the same characters in them. I mean, you look at all the Avengers characters and all the X-Men characters. That's a major issue. But, all right, well, we got a couple other things that we need to cover here before we run out of time, because we're already pushing up closer to the end. Booze in the Book this week is Black Kiss 2, number one from Image Comics, written and drawn by Howard Chaykin. I'm going to recommend pairing this with a large glass of Crown Royal Special Reserve, served neat.
Wow, neat.
Yes, and so to those of you not familiar with the term neat, it means straight up. No ice and absolutely
wow,
no mixers.
Man, you make me salivate.
Yeah. The reason for the pairing between is that both the book and the whiskey are not intended for minors. And the book and the whiskey really shouldn't be given to anybody with the inability to appreciate the finer things in life. These are really meant for intelligent people who can appreciate the more primal urges that man has, all while enjoying a good shock to the system, you know, at the end of the day, and knowing that that's one of the best things that you can have. So, that's it. Great book. Whew. Very graphic.
Very, very graphic. That's all I can say. Very adult.
Yeah. I actually had my comic book store, I had to ask them if they got it in, because they were keeping it behind the shelves.
Oh, really? Like, so how did you hear about this one?
This one, looking on previews and stuff online coming up, and yeah. So, on to the Indie Turnpike, and I'm going to go through this probably a little bit faster than I would like to. Indie Turnpike this week, I read number one of a 5-issue weekly series.
But how often do weekly series happen?
Not too often. Very, very rarely.
Is there anything like mainstream that is weekly?
Walking Dead weekly.
Really?
Yeah. Hey, Tony,
careful
on how you handle the damn books. You know I'm weird like that.
How long have they been doing the Walking Dead weekly series? I thought it was monthly.
No, they have the weekly as well.
Is it shorter?
It's just, I don't know.
I'm just imagining it's like just a 12-page quick flip through or something.
I'm assuming it'd probably be a full 22-page, but I don't know. I didn't pick it up. I know it's been out for a while. It's one of the things that kept me from actually picking up the series originally, because I was going, well, how much am I going to have to read? So, but anyway, back to the weekly, or Dead World, War of the Dead, number one of the 5-issue series. This is printed by IDW, and it's written by Gary Reed. Art was done by Sammy Mackinnon. Hopefully I'm pronouncing his name right. This is a fantastic zombie book, and I'm guessing that this may stir up a little bit of controversy. We're actually going to do a special edition zombie podcast at some point in the near future after I get a chance to go back and read all of the old stuff from here. This book first appeared back in 1987 when the title was originally done. It was published by Arrow back then and then subsequently moved over to Caliber Comics. This is a book that actually I'm not going to give too much away about, just because I really want people to go out and pick it up. Anybody that likes zombie movies or horror movies or books should go pick this up. And even if you've never tried this type of a comic book, I think anybody that likes that type of movie or TV show will enjoy it. So not only are there zombies, but there are lepers as well that, due to experiments and tests done on them, to kind of see what leprosy virus would do to zombies. So people were given leprosy against their own will.
Okay. You say Caliber? Caliper?
Caliber.
Okay.
What did used to do it. This is IDW now.
Okay.
But Caliber originally printed The Crow.
I've heard of that.
Yeah. So, I hope you've heard of that. One of the cool things is that they actually have intelligent zombies in this book as well.
Like, are they going to be picking up guns and stuff?
Like,
or
smoking cigarettes and riding motorcycles type of intelligent zombies.
Oh, wow.
Now, they only showed, it's what they call, I think it's the Zombie King. They showed his picture at the end. But now, they're survivors in this world. Obviously, they got to fend off the undead. they're one of the cool things that they have is people that they call ghosts, that they have been infected by the leprosy virus, and because their dead is quote unquote, or because their flesh is quote unquote dead, they can actually go walk amongst the zombies, and the zombies don't attack them. And so, the one thing that I want to say about this book before we, you know, before I let it go, is that fans of the Walking Dead may get their panties in a bunch when they read this book, because they're going to see some similarities. Now, some of them are very minor, and that's going to happen when you do any kind of zombie book or movie, because there's really only so many scenarios. But some of them that might be a little shocked by one of the characters in here by the name of Donna, because Donna is a katana-wielding zombie killer, not unlike Michonne from The Walking Dead. Now, as far as character goes, they have nothing in common beyond that, but when you first look at it, you're going to be like, whoa, you know, they stole that. Actually, they didn't steal it. This character has been around since the 80s.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's something where I really want to go back and read those original ones. But I need to talk about the art in this book. Mackinnon has an insanely terrifying style to his work. It looks like it's watercolor done over pencils, but I'm guessing it's probably colored digitally, just because that's how most everything is colored these days. There's a really heavy sepia tone to the art, which really adds to the rundown and dilapidated cities and society there. And honestly, the only way I can probably describe this book is that it's like reading a nightmare. I mean, the writing is beautiful.
Oh my gosh, I see exactly what you're talking about. That is well said.
Yeah. Reed and Mackinnon put together an amazing book, and they're doing a fantastic job with this. And, I mean, with so many different zombie things out there, it's hard to pick. I'm telling everybody, you've got to go buy this book. It's five-issue weekly series, so jump on it now before these books are too hard to find. So that pretty much does it for us this week. I know we're running a little bit long. We've got a couple little pieces of business we need to take care of. We've got a contest going on right now where if you go out, find a public computer someplace, and put our website up on it, take a picture, send us the picture, you get an entry. All the rules and stuff are online on drunkoncomics.com. We're gonna have two winners for that. One will be randomly drawn. One will be selected as our personal favorite amongst the guests or amongst the hosts. So last time there were some damn good comics that went out. Last time we had a comic book contest. You can find us at Twitter at DrunkOnComics. You can find us on Facebook.com/DrunkOnComics. Obviously, DrunkOnComics.com. I think that's going to have to do it for us for today.
Yep, we're running out of time, so we will see you all next week. All
right, say goodbye, Kevin.
Well, goodbye, Kevin. And I want to do one of these.
Oh, you want to do it?
Yeah, we're actually drinking on this on this episode.
Yes,
so
we are drinking. So, Tony?
I already said my goodbyes.
All right, so I guess that's goodbye for me, too.
So
on behalf
long, everybody.
Of all of us here at Drunk on Comics, keep on reading them, and we will come back and talk to you about them next week. See ya. I'm drilling.